Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we have an absolutely fascinating subject to talk about. Now, I know you've heard about the Roswell environment, situation, legend, whatever term you want to add on to the end of Roswell, but how about the Roswell legacy? This is the untold story of the first military officer at the 1947 crash site, but we're going to be going further than that. We're going to be talking to his son, Jesse Marcel. Jesse, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna. I appreciate being here.
I'll tell you, I was so impressed with your material. I don't know about any of my listeners, but a long, long, long time ago, I became very much aware of the fact that we're not the only people that are on this, in this universe, period.
Well, exactly.
And when information comes out about Roswell, there is so much hype. I mean, by the time you get through watching most of the programs, you just go, oh, ho-hum. When are we really going to have some good substance? Now, I have to say to you that Stanton Friedman, who wrote the foreword in your book, I have a great deal of respect for Stanton, and he's been a guest on my show more than once. So when I had the opportunity of reading your material, and having talked to Stanton and been involved with some other wonderful, wonderful people who are very dedicated to finding out the truth, it was very, very thrilling for me to know that you have finally taken on the big job of conveying the truth that is your experience, your father's experience, to the best of your capability of talking about, and your family's experience. I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You are a man that has been very committed and dedicated to a military career. You're a retired military officer. You served as a medical officer in the United States Navy. You participated in the Cuban Missile Crisis. You were on board a troop transport ship. Now, prior to going into the Navy, you went to Louisiana State University, the School of Medicine, which you graduated from. You received specialty training in otolaryngology. I'm sorry, I probably massacred the word. And you left the Navy in 1971. You opened up a medical practice in Helena, Montana. Now, you joined the Montana National Guard as a medical officer. You earned your flight surgeon wings at Fort Rucker, Alabama. And during your career in the National Guard, you were appointed the state surgeon of Montana. Then you retired. And what I found so interesting is that the Iraqi War, Operation Iraqi Freedom, returned you to active duty in September of 2004. And at the age of 69, you spent 13 months as a flight surgeon for the 189th Helicopter Battalion in Iraq, where you flew more than 225 combat hours in a Black Hawk helicopter. You are still working medically, and would you please pronounce the specialty that you're in? This is just is a tongue twister of tongue twisters. And the more I think about it, the less my tongue is willing to go operate.
Well, it really is. It's taken me years to learn how to pronounce otolaryngology. That's ear, nose, and throat diseases.
Oh, good. Thank you. Well, those of you know what his specialty is now. I really practiced that before we started the show, and for some reason, my tongue just would not cooperate. So I just said, I'm going to have you say it, because that's going to make it a lot easier. Well, Roswell, your whole family was affected by this incident. You were 11 years old. Tell us what happened.
Well, you know, this is 1947, and my dad was the Air Force intelligence officer at Roswell Army Airfield for the 509th Bomb Group. And what his job was to investigate aircraft accidents and events involving intelligence. Well, apparently something crashed on a ranch outside of Roswell, on the Foster Ranch, And the ranch foreman, Bill Brazel, or Mac Brazel, brought a portion of some sort of wreckage into the local sheriff, who then forwarded it to the air base at Roswell. The base commander, Colonel Blanchard, then dispatched my dad, my father, and a CIC agent, Sheridan Cavett, out to the field to see what this was, because they knew something crashed out there, but, you know, not knowing enough about it, they had to get more information. So they sent my dad and Sheridan Cavett out there, and when they got there, you know, Mac Brazel took my dad out to the crash site, and he described a large area of metallic-type debris just scattered out over the surface of the ground. And what he did, he picked up a representative sample of this debris and was going to bring it into the air base so that Colonel Blanchard could see it. Our house in Roswell happened to be on the way to the air base. So even though it was about 1 o'clock in the morning, my dad stopped by because he knew this was something very unique and very special. So he wanted my mother and myself to see this. So he brought it into the house. He got my mother and myself up to look at this this unusual wreckage. He'd already pre-positioned it on the kitchen floor of our house. And when he got me out of bed, again, it was maybe 1 o'clock in the morning or something like that, and he was very excited, and he conveyed the idea that this was parts of, and I think he used the words flying saucer to describe what he had, you know, at least parts of it. And so I looked on the kitchen floor, and yes, there was, you know, different types of metallic debris and material like that. And so we just spent the next 15 or 20 minutes looking at this.
So you looked at it. You also were able to handle some of it. Is that
right,
true?
Yes. You know, what he did, first of all, he says, you know, get down there, look at this, and see if you can find any electronic components like vacuum tube resistors or condensers. Well, he already knew there wasn't, but he wanted me to satisfy myself that there wasn't. And indeed, there was not anything like that. The wreckage consisted of like a lot of foil-like material, very kind of strange quality to it. And there's some I-beams, looks like structural members that had an unusual writing or symbols along the inside surface of this. And, you know, I picked one of these pieces up and looked at it, and I thought at first, this is Egyptian hieroglyphics. But it wasn't that. It was more like geometric symbols,
mm-hmm.
Different shapes and configurations. And it did have kind of an unusual color to it, like a purple-violet hue, semi-reflective of light. And so I looked at this, and I thought, wow, this is really something else. And I never have seen anything like that before, nor since, actually. So he was right there.
In your material that you sent, you said that one of the reasons you decided to do this book is that you had promised your dad that you would tell the truth. And as I mentioned earlier, so many times there's so much fluff and stuff that comes out about this. It's so refreshing to read your account as you have it.
Yes.
Why did it take you so long to decide to do this?
Well, you know, I just was thinking about it for years, and, you know, when I was stationed in Iraq, and I'm not getting any younger, obviously, so when I was stationed in Iraq and the sense of mortality was very strong there, I thought, you know, I better get off the stick there and start writing this thing while I can still do it. So I started writing the book when I was in Iraq there, and I finished it up shortly after I was referred back home. But I wanted to go ahead and get the book out just to give my dad credibility that he needed in letting people know that he knew what he's looking at, that this was not a balloon target or something like the Air Force is saying it was, because my dad indeed went through radar school, so he was well acquainted with what radar targets look like. And as a matter of fact, he went to an intelligence school and was even on the faculty of the intelligence school. So he was not one to given to wide imagination or exaggerations of something. And again, that's what I wanted to do, was get the book out so I could redefine his credibility, let people know that, yes, he knew what he's talking about, he knew what he was, and let people decide from there.
I think it's very significant that in your book, and I'm going to quote from it directly, his dedication to the Army and his country ran deep. However, he never wrote anything that would have run contrary to his orders to keep silent about the events that were about to transpire. You felt that your father left this responsibility to you because you didn't take that oath. He did.
Yeah.
And having known people that have served in the military, that is something that when they make that oath of commitment to secrecy, they die with it, usually. There's very, very few that will ever come forward. But I want to mention some things about your dad. He had 15 awards for combat credit, 15 decorations in bronze service stars awarded for service, an Air Medal with Oak Leaf Cluster for operational combat flight missions from December 4, 1943 to April 23, 1944. He was attached to the 65th Bomb Squadron. He received the Soldier's Medal for meritorious achievement in military operations against the enemy in the Southwest Pacific area from January 15, 1944 to November 1, 1944. People tried to destroy your dad's reputation. Isn't that the way things go when they want secrets not to be revealed? And there were all kinds of people that tried to do it. His superior officers never, ever questioned his commitment and dedication before or after the Roswell event. He had absolutely high, excellent ratings with everything that he did. But someone, like you said, called him unimaginative, but you said if he was not imaginative, how could he imagine debris from a weather balloon as having come from a flying saucer? I mean, that, you know, just amazing. So there's all of this wonderful, wonderful information about your father. And interestingly enough, people tried to say that this destroyed his career, all kinds of things, but that wasn't the case at all because he was promoted to lieutenant colonel in the reserves.
That's right.
This debris that was found, now, it had an unusual color to it. It had markings on it. What were some of the characteristics that you and your father noticed when you were down on the floor examining this, besides these couple of comments that you've made?
Well, you know, again, you know, the metal foil could be confused with the aluminum foil of today. And except, you know, I didn't try to tear it or bend it or stress it in any way because, you know, I just kind of handled it very carefully. And so I didn't see anything unusual other than that the... you know, it's just different. It's, you know, it's hard to describe the characteristic of it being different from aluminum foil. It was not that. It was light, and I could tell that it was rather tough and not indestructible, but close to it. But I guess the most unusual debris that I saw were the beams that had this particular kind of symbols written across the inner surface of it. Now, I heard my dad later describe the foil as having a property of unfolding. You know, if you fold it up or crumpled it up, it would unfold like metal with the memory. And I also heard him describe a larger piece that I did not see myself, that one of the men in his office tried to dent with a sledgehammer and it failed to dent it. So he described it like that. Oh, I did not personally see this feature, but he himself did, and he described it to me.
Now, all of this material was taken away from your dad.
Right. Yeah, what he did, you know, when Colonel Blanchard realized that they had something very strange here, he wanted General Ramey, the 8th Air Force commander stationed at Fort Worth Army Air Force Base, to look at this. So he had my dad fly a representative sample of the debris to Fort Worth so that General Ramey could see this. And it was flown in a B-29 under armed guard. And so my dad brought it into General Ramey's office, and there's some very famous pictures of him with not the debris that we found in that he found in Roswell, but with balloon debris. So that's where the cover-up started. You know, when General Ramey saw this, he was thinking that, you know, this is something that probably the general public should not know about at this point. So they had some photographs taken in the office of substituted debris.
In your material, you talk, I'll quote again directly from your chapter. You say, in the 200-plus years of our history of the government of the United States and the military, there is no other incident for which, even after 60 years have passed, the government has continued to devote time and money to keep the truth of the event from the public. And I find that very interesting because in many ways the government has hidden so much information on so many levels. But this one has been so hot that the general public has not allowed it to rest. And, of course, there's been all kinds of speculation. So I'm so glad you came forward. Now, initially, you said, when this incident occurred, there was a statement. The government offices claimed that it had recovered a flying disc on a ranch outside of Roswell. But within 24 hours, all of that changed. Tell us about the cover-up.
Well, you know, Colonel Blanchard ordered Walter Hunt, who is the public information officer at the Roswell Army Airfield, to release a statement of the fact that the Air Force recovered a flying saucer. And so it was hyped up in the local newspaper to that effect. But but when my dad brought the material to Fort Worth, they decided this is something that should be covered up. So my dad was ordered not to ever talk about this again. And Walter Hunt was reordered to put out a retraction to the initial story. So then the next day, you know, the paper had the story with Walter Hunt that the Air Force made a big mistake, that this was just a weather balloon, and how silly could they have been to have confused a weather balloon with a flying saucer. But my dad was ordered to go along with the cover-up, and he later admitted that he was part of the cover-up. And when he came back home to from Fort Worth, he sat my mother and myself down and instructed us at that time to never talk about this again. Like, this is a non-event, did not happen. And that's where it stayed for many years.
Dr. Moore. Who is Dr. Moore, and what was he associated with, and why was he significant?
Okay, well, you know, what happened was that, initially the Air Force put out the cover story that this was just a radar target from a weather balloon. Then later they changed the story that, no, we made a mistake. It was not a weather balloon. It was what they call a mobile balloon, which was at that time a top-secret device, which was designed to detect a nuclear explosion in the Soviet Union. So it would have been a top-secret mission, although the material itself was still mundane. It was still used the same kind of radar targets that a weather balloon would use. And the mission was a secret, but not the material, just off-the-shelf material. So they put the cover story out that this was that. And Professor Moore, or Dr. Moore, was the man in charge of the Mogul project.
You had a mysterious individual that called you one day and said that he had some very special information for you. This was a government official. What did he say to you? And
where did he take you for security? Here in Helena, I got a call from this gentleman. He knew that I was going to a meeting in Washington, D.C., and he told me that he wanted to see me when I came in for the meeting. So when I got to Washington, I didn't meet with the gentleman, and he was very friendly and matter-of-factist, and he says, I understand you saw something at Roswell. I said, well, yeah, I sure did. And he said, well, tell me, let's go talk about this. And he asked me, did I want to discuss this issue in a secure room, in other words, a room that there's no mic recording devices and so forth. And I said, you know, it doesn't matter to me because I'm not going to say anything that I haven't said before. And he said, well, I might tell you something, so we'll go down and talk in a secure room. And believe me, the Capitol building has many office and floors beneath the ground level, so we got an elevator, went way down about the third or fourth level below the ground there, and we met in a very special room there, which was obviously a meeting room for high conversations. And on the table where we sat, there was a copy of Majestic, which was a book on Roswell. And he pointed the book and said, this is not fiction. Actually, it was a fiction, but it was based on an actual account there, a fictional account of the Roswell thing. But he said, this is not fiction. Now, tell me what you know about Roswell. So I went on, and I described again what I've said today. And he says, well, have you ever been threatened by this? I said, no, I've never been threatened by this. And he gave me his cell phone number and all that to call off, should I ever get any threats on this. And I asked him a question myself. I said, when are you guys going to let people know what happened there? And he said if it was up to him, he would have talked about it yesterday. But it wasn't up to him. His job was to try to discover where the debris was located at that point. Because apparently they didn't know, and he was trying to find out where it was. And he did say something about, well, there's a black government, you know, only conspiracy type things, which I'm not sure I go along with, but anyway, he said there was a black government that is controlling us now, and we're trying to determine who it is that has this. He said these are people who don't answer to anyone, who have unlimited funds to spend, and they're not elected, you know, so they're just kind of a closed society there. But he said he thinks that that's where the debris is, in control of these people. So that's where, you know, it was very interesting, that conversation, because it was the first time that somebody from the government admitted that the Roswell event was not fiction.
Your fascination with flying saucers, UFOs, isn't just because of your dad's experience. You tell about other events that went on, that have been recorded, and one you said that was particularly frightening and disturbing was not in the U.S., but it was in the Soviet Union on October the 4th, 1982, in the Ukraine. Tell us about that event.
Well, what happened there is that, and this is just from, this is in the, from documents, has been documented this actually happened in the Russian records. And what happened there is at a Soviet missile site, apparently a flying saucer or some UFO appeared over the area, and the technicians at the control panels noticed that the missile was getting ready to be set off, that it was enabling itself to be launched. And they did everything they could to stop it, but nothing they did stopped it. But all of a sudden, you know, it went back to ground level, and the enabling stopped, you know, not from what they did, but because of the fact that the flying saucer went away. So apparently this flying saucer was controlling the missile, getting ready to launch it, but, you know, not quite all the way to launch, but close. But they're trying to tell us something. I think they're controlling our weapon systems.
Well, I hope they're smarter than we are.
Well, I think they are.
I hope so, Jesse.
They can get here from wherever they come from. So that tells
Let's
a little bit about
so.
Their technology, yeah.
Jesse, you have a lovely wife who has seen you go through. You've been married for how long?
Oh, I've been married since 1980 to the same wife. No, I lost my first wife in an automobile accident, then I remarried a while later.
Linda is a woman that has experienced part of this journey with you.
Yes.
And being a military wife is really tough. You had a wonderful family. Now, interestingly enough, in the book you said your children were fearful of Roswell. Is there a reason for that?
Well, initially they were, but I think they've grown to accept the fact that that it's something that happened. That I think they've lost their fear, but you know, my daughters were a little scared of the fact that when you realize that we're not by ourselves, that extraterrestrial visitations have occurred, it was a little unsettling to them.
I can imagine. It takes us out of the box substantially, doesn't it?
It does, it does.
Jesse, you talk about the domino effect in your book. You talk about life in the cosmos beyond Roswell. It's fascinating to you. Here you are, a man of mature years, who, if you had the opportunity to go into outer space and be part of a Star Trek experience, you probably would stand up and say, hey, I'll be first in line for the ticket.
Yeah, let me go.
Absolutely. We have so much that has changed so rapidly with technology. We have so much in the world that is evolving at a pace that's demanding, absolutely demanding that we shift. With all that you've gone through, with your father's legacy, with where you are today as a man that is delivering a message of truth about what happened, bringing out a lot of points and information that you can substantiate, Jesse, where do you think you're going to be able to make the biggest impression and get a result for the generations that are coming up? We have generations that are looking to outer space that are really saying, I want to know more. What would you say to those in my audience that have such an interest in this?
Well, you know, I'd say just stay tuned. You know, we have a space program that's very active, and we're sending our own UFOs to other planets, you know, in our own solar system. And just keep up with what's happening with our own technology in space. So, you know, I've done all I can. You know, I'm not a researcher, but I am as an observer. And so I can just tell what I saw and let people decide from themselves what they can determine and learn from just keeping up with the headlines in space and NASA and things like that.
What are your feelings about secrecy and the way the government has followed a patterning? I always am amazed at how a few will determine what we as individuals can handle. It's as if they're dealing, they feel like we're a bunch of dumbed down idiots that can't figure things out, for heaven's sake.
Well, I think, you know, as far as secrecy about UFOs and things like that, I think the government should release all the documents that they have. And it's not the United States, just the United States government, but it's worldwide. It's not just us. But I think the world government should get together and just come out with what they know about the UFOs and extraterrestrial visitations. Now, I do think that, obviously, there should be some secrets in the government. You know, obviously, we can't let our military secrets go, weapons and things like that. But I think that as far as UFOs and extraterrestrial visitation, I think they should release that. And I don't know why they're not.
I think it's fear. That's my personal bias. Also, I think it's a form of manipulation and control. I think it's a shame because there are individuals that I have had good conversation with who are so far ahead in their thinking. I mean, we think about technology that we have today that we're able to use every day, and it's not that far off. I think Gene Roddenberry was such a visionary, along with the other writers that worked with him.
Absolutely, yes.
Just an incredible visionary. And look at how many of the things that were promoted in his programming. Let's see, that started when, in the 60s? 70s?
Yes, uh-huh.
So there was good old Gene putting these programs out, and people couldn't get enough of them. And here we find so much. The communicator, we have that. You know, we've got cell phones that have evolved. We've got so many things that are happening with such rapidness. I was reading something about AT&T's developments that they've got. We've got all of these think tanks where brilliant people are putting things together. And the sharing of information due to the internet is unbelievably rapid. I mean, it is just phenomenal. So I think, as you said, putting stuff out, let's stop treating people with the mentality that they are like children, recognizing that we are moving forward with a speed and that we do have to talk about this because it is real. It's nothing new, really, but we're becoming aware of it. Instead of coming from a positioning of fear, we come from a positioning of intelligent, to the best of our capabilities, understanding, so that we can go where no one else has dared to go before. And I love your last sentence. You say, it's my deepest wish that our children and our grandchildren, their eyes, their minds, and their hearts will remain always open so that they may experience a universe filled with wonders we can scarcely imagine. I think that's a fabulous way to close a fascinating book. And, Jesse, I wanted to ask you, do you have a website that people can go to where they can find out more about this book?
Yes, it's jessemarcelsenior.com. That's where they can find out a little bit more about the book, and they can order an autographed book if they want to from that website. So jessemarcelsenior.com.
And let me say, Jesse is J-E-S-S-E, Marcel is M-A-R-C-E-L. Is it senior or junior?
Oh, senior.
Senior.com.
Yeah.
JesseMarcelSenior.com. And you'll have it there. The Roswell Legacy, the untold story of the first military officer at the 1947 crash site. Jesse, I think as his son, you have done a phenomenally fine job with your publication, and I'm sure that you're going to be talking to a lot of people throughout the country and even the world regarding this, and I wish you the best in your endeavors.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that, Donna. You've been very kind with your words and feelings here.
Thank you, sir, and much success to you. And, hey, if you come out with something else, let me know. I'd love to have you again as a guest.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
You're very welcome. And, ladies and gentlemen, JesseMarcelSenior.com. Go to that website. Find out what is for real, without the fluff, without the hype. The Roswell Legacy, Jesse Marcel, Jr., the son of Jesse Marcel Sr., and it's good when the truth is spoken. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. I've got good things to share with you.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, ttap.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open. If you would like to call in and chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Now, here are the toll-free numbers you can call in to, 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And we also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. So if you are a first-time listener, welcome. We're glad to have you as part of the listening family for the Donna Sebo Show. Tell your friends all about it, but also know that if you want to call in and chat with me, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Then let me share with you what I perceive. I consider myself an information resource, and then after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you might be interested in getting more information about. So again, 877-876-5227, 888-815-9756, and 530-876-3222. Well, this microphone is not going to be traveling. I will be traveling, but the microphone won't be going with me because I've got a major conference that I'm going to be attending, as well as being a part of the Wisdom Festival in San Francisco. And this is going to be quite a dynamic next few days, and I'll be sharing some of that information with you next week when I'm back in studio. But in the interim, I want you to know tomorrow you're going to be hearing Russell Targ. These will be replays of programs that I've done. Russell Targ was involved with the CIA. He is the leading expert in remote viewing. And this was an interview that was done that we talked about how his career evolved into doing research work. And then you're going to be hearing on Friday a gentleman by the name of David, and we're going to be talking about certain things regarding politics in the 1960s. It's about history. It's fascinating, interesting, and both of those shows are going to be played for you, so you won't be able to call in and chat with me tomorrow or Friday. But that's okay. I'll be back in studio live on Monday. Meanwhile, let's go to our first caller for today. First name or initial, welcome to the show, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Donna. This is JoJo from Los Angeles.
All right. I can barely hear you, so I'm sorry. Who is it again?
JoJo from Los Angeles.
All right. All right, JoJo, the first thing that I am looking at with you is swirls. Now, this is going to sound a little strange, but actually the picture has expanded. It was as if I was seeing swirls in water. Then it expanded to like a ripple patterning. And if you've ever seen a picture where a drop of water hits the surface, the flat surface of water itself, and the circular patterning that evolves out, that's what I was seeing as the final picture. There is an action that you are putting into play. It's like a drop of water. It's very small, and it's going to hit a surface that is going to create an activity that is going to be far-reaching. You are, little by little, evolving into a positioning where you have communication that is going to be expanding more and more and more. It's the little things that will create the biggest effect. It is fascinating to me because you have been very, very diligent about what you have been doing. And you think like nothing really is moving for you, but that's not true. That's not true at all. But it takes touching the surface that has the mobility. In other words, your actions have to reach that positioning that enables a momentum to build up. It's like talking with one person and saying, I have a need, and that person says, oh, well, let me call so-and-so and so-and-so, and then before you know it, there are all these links that finally get you to where you need to be in the way of contact. That's what's happening for you right now. This is going on. Synchronicity is going to be so significant in your life that if you pay attention to it, it is really going to surprise you. Just sort of relax and allow things to move. Allow things to build their own momentum. There's no force here. There's no pushing here. Allow them to make their own energy. This sounds probably very woo-woo, but I'm not meaning it to. It is very difficult for me sometimes when I get certain images in my head to be able to convey verbally the essence of it. You're not lost. You are doing a very good job. Just stay consistent, stay true, be open and receptive to opportunity. And it may come in the most unlikely of guises. What would you like to ask me today, JoJo?
I'd like to ask in terms of me leaving a current relationship, what's, I guess, the wisest way I can move on?
Well, I think with the individual, I think that they're aware that there is a change coming. I don't think it's going to be a big surprise. What I feel that you need to think through is what is going to be comfortable for you, and don't drag this out. There needs to be a way of having a conversation with someone where you could say to this individual, this is where I am, this is what I am aware of, and I like you, I think you're a good human being. But I'm just not feeling fulfilled in the relationship, and you need to be with someone who really wants you in their lives in the way that you want them to want you. But I'm not it. And, of course, you can make up your own words, whatever is going to be appropriate. Why is this so tough for you to be able to separate? You're usually a very decisive individual. Is there a reason why you hesitate to talking directly with this individual?
Well, I guess when there's love involved and hope, you know, I don't like to quit, and I'm very loyal.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I don't, you know, I don't like to give up on someone, and I don't, you know, I don't know if that loyalty is well placed, but, you know, I keep having hope for this person, and even though it might appear to everyone else that this person is healthy and takes care of themselves, it's the exact opposite, almost. You know, it's an improvement from my past experiences, but here I am a healer, and here this person is someone who needs a lot of healing, but of course doesn't want it from me, which is probably a good thing. But the fact is, you know, I want someone that's healthy in my life. And I've seen improvements, you know, I've seen changes, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us have changed, you know, it was a quick relationship, but it's not fast enough for me. And really, I'm just seeing the writing on the wall, you know, as my life accelerates and does these things, she keeps trying to hold me back.
All right, we've got to go to break. Will you wait, stay on the line, and we can chat about this a little bit?
Absolutely.
All right, this is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break, and remember, if you want to call in, the phone number is 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're taking a break. We'll come back to talk to JoJo, and we will be right back to chat to you as well. So don't go away.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Before I go back to JoJo, I want to remind those of you who are in Northern California, I'm going to be appearing at the Wisdom Festival at Four Masons in San Francisco. We have got a wonderful event that is going to be happening, and we want you to come out, bring your friends, bring your families. It is going to be a great weekend. People, speakers from all over the country are going to be coming in, products and services from around the world, and classes. There are going to be speakers like myself, so many other individuals, all sharing what they have in the way of knowledge and experience with you. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be educational. It's going to be a fun place to be, lots of interesting activities. And just know there's a lot of nice people to talk to. So if you want to get some discounted tickets, go to wisdomfestival.com. That's wisdomfestival.com. You'll find out about the hours. You'll find out about parking. All the information you could possibly need will be right on their website, wisdomfestival.com. And by the way, do come in and say hello. I would love to be able to interact with you, and I will be doing many consultations while I'm there. Again, I will also be speaking, and the scheduled speaking appearances will be right in the program. So I believe it's on Saturday around 11 in the morning that I'm going to be giving a talk on the power of one. So do go check us out. This is the only time during the year when the Wisdom Festival is held, and it's just magical always to be in San Francisco. Well, let's go back to JoJo. JoJo?
Yeah.
When you are talking about this relationship, I just wanted to come back to you because I feel it's important. You've made a number of very significant statements, and that you want a partner that is well. It could be that for whatever reason, and you are in the healing aspect, and this is obviously a very, very important part of your life, and you want someone in your life that you feel is more balanced, that this person has been brought into your space so that both of you could grow. And that you may not want to be committed, for example, being married to each other, and that's all right. That's not the issue is, the issue here. The issue here is that you must make peace with yourself and know that you're going to be able to make the release in a healthy, beneficial way for both you and for the companion that you have at this time. And the fact that you said you're frustrated with the changes not occurring quickly enough, perhaps there is a lesson in this for you. And perhaps that lesson is not to try to own or to manipulate or to try to control someone else. We all are going to have our own particular experiences. When you really love someone, you will love them because of who they are and what they are. That you may not want to live with that person as a marital partner doesn't mean you still cannot love them. And I think part of what's going on here is that you are growing into a depth of understanding about yourself, as well as about life. And believe it or not, I think this person is something like a teacher for you. And that is probably where you as a student are getting rather irritated with yourself because you say, I should be beyond this. But we all have to learn and grow in our own way. I don't think it will come as a surprise to this individual. I really don't. And I think that when there is the opportunity, and you'll know when it's the right time, there will be a conversation, and you will find that you will both be in agreement that you're not meant to be each other's permanent partner, if you will. And that's okay. One of the greatest gifts I think we can ever give it to anyone is unconditional love. It doesn't mean you want to live with them all the time, but you can still love someone. And I think that's part and parcel of what's going on with you right now. And this isn't a criticism or a condemnation. It's just something I hope makes you aware that the strength of what you really feel and what you really desire, and at the same time being in the healing arts, you're getting a lot of stuff that is coming to the forefront that I think you're evolving through. Am I making sense to you?
Yeah, you're making a lot of sense. I'm going to have to listen to this again to absorb it on another level. Because when you mention this, it's like I fully understand that I have a part in this too. And I'm seeing her go through these issues that keep coming up. And there is a lot of control going on, but I honestly felt it was mostly her, basically controlling emotions and this and that, and finding out, you know, that she had made decisions about our relationship weeks or months ago and then didn't tell me about it. I'm just kind of hanging along for the ride and not, you know, all of a sudden the rug comes out someday when there is a conversation. Like,
well,
oh, yeah,
again, let me just stop you for a moment and make a comment. So often we can look at someone else and identify certain things, and they may be the very thing that we are trying to overcome ourselves.
Okay.
And I think you're both very strong people, and I think both of you have gone through a great deal in your lives. And so you want to be able to demonstrate your strength. And many times, when we are afraid of what we perceive as our weaknesses, we become even weaker. And I think that part of her journey is to discover that she doesn't need to be afraid. Part of your journey is to discover that you don't need to worry about what she thinks if she's been planning something months in advance. Who cares? You're giving it too much energy. You don't need to worry about that. It's all right. She has the right to be able to do this and to go through her own growth. And I think for you, when you can release that, when you don't have to own it, when you don't have to say, well, you know, we're in this together, everything you do has an influence on me, blah, 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 get rid of all that togetherness nonsense to a degree. It's amazing. We forget that we're individuals. It's okay to be individuals. So on one hand, there is a lot, I think, that you're aspiring and you're breaking through, but I think in many ways she's being a very good teacher, and I think you're being a good teacher for her in some respects. And when you can come to that point of peace within yourself and realize it's okay, you can love this person, whether they're purple, yellow, or, you know, striped with gorillas. It doesn't make any difference. That this isn't the person that you want as your partner is okay.
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. You know, that's a tough one.
Remember, my friend, we never own anything in this life.
Yeah.
There's a story of a butterfly that it meant a lot to me many, many years ago when I heard it for the first time. That if you want to know about love, open up your hand and visualize a butterfly in the hand. And I've had the privilege of having a butterfly in the palm of my hand. Now you can take your fingers and you can put your fingers around that butterfly. It'll die very, very quickly. But when you have your fingers open and your palm flat, that butterfly may stay there for hours. But when it chooses to fly away, it chooses because that's what it wants. But it stays with you because it wants to stay there. Love is like that. Anytime you try to own it, anytime you try to possess it, you end up suffocating it. You don't give it a chance to breathe. And I think the symbology of the butterfly is so very, very special. So I'll leave that with you.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome, JoJo. You have a great day.
You too, Donna. Thank you.
This is Donna Sebo. My goodness, I think we're running out of time here. You know, I have the best recipe here for a chocolate fruit crumble, and I promised I was going to give that to you the other day. But I think it's going to have to wait till next week because I'm just about out of time here. And, of course, the next 2 days, don't forget, we're going to be having pre-recorded programming on because I'm on the road traveling, and I'm going to be at the Wisdom Festival on Saturday and Sunday. Actually, I'll be there Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and I'm really looking forward to it and looking forward to meeting a lot of you. Now, hey, this month, because it's Halloween month, whoa, we've got some fun things coming up. Next week, we're going to be traveling to Nebraska. Lisa Knopf is going to be my guest. We're going to be talking about corn country, excuse me. And this, she has just done a wonderful job with remembrances of Nebraska and its history. Then we're going to be talking with Deborah M. Cody, Grits for the Oyster, 250 Pearls of Wisdom for Aspiring Writers. Hey, is there a book inside of you? Is there something you want to share with other people? Well, don't miss out on Deborah. Then we're going to get into zombies. Oh, yes. Bob Curran, we're going to be going to Northern Ireland to talk to a man who has history on these particular creatures and other, well, sort of weird individuals. Then we've got UFOs over New York. I told you this is going to be a fun month. UFOs over New York. Preston Dennett is going to be my guest next Thursday. And then we're going to be talking about women of history, their own frontier, women and intellectuals revisioning the American West. Oh, wow, these gals were dynamite, terrific women. So we've got a wonderful lineup next week, and I hope you'll share it with your friends and tell them to listen to the show because we always have such interesting people. When you stop and think about all of these minds that are out there with each and every one of their own experiences, and wow, they put stuff into written form, and we're able to share it with you. That's pretty exciting, don't you think? This world is full of so many possibilities. It's a joy to know that that's the case. So remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Vision your future. Look at where you want to be. Make an investment in yourself. You're your most valuable resource. Don't worry about the banks that are going out of business and other things. Hey, you're the one resource that is silver, gold, and platinum. Make it shine. Invest in yourself. and life will take care of itself. This is Donna Sebo. I'll be talking with you on Monday. Bye for now. Don't forget to tune in for the great guests we have tomorrow and Friday, though. Bye-bye.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.